Hey, everybody, this is Brett. And before we get started today, I just want to talk to you for a minute about FEE, the Foundation for Economic Education. Just for this January, they were our first sponsor ever. And, you know, it was just as special as your first sponsorship is supposed to be. FEE, back in the day, introduced me to a lot of people I still respect and value today. Jeffrey Tucker, Sheldon Richmond, Robert Higgs. And I'm really convinced they can have a very similar positive and educational impact on the next generation of free market thinkers. And I highly recommend you checking them out. In the very near future, the Foundation for Economic Education will be running three-day seminars all across the country to teach young people the power of economic thinking. These seminars are available to anyone between the ages of 14 and 26. They focus primarily on entrepreneurship and business success. And if you are in that age group, you can go and you can learn new methods of thinking that can help you pursue your passions more confidently. So, join top students, successful business leaders, and great teachers to discover the relationship between personal and social wealth, as well as the virtues of an enterprising life. The total cost for the 3 days is only $79, which includes all meals and housing. Tuition and travel reimbursement scholarships are available, and there is no charge to apply. Applications are reviewed and accepted on a rolling basis. Apply today at fee.org/students. And please let them know that you heard about this opportunity through our show, The School Sucks Podcast. All right, showtime.
Welcome to The School Sucks Project, a podcast, YouTube channel, and online community dedicated to personal growth and intellectual self-defense.
We promote learning alternatives, home education, critical thinking, peaceful parenting, organization and productivity, and better communication strategies.
Please remember to visit schoolsucksproject.com to get comprehensive show notes, relevant links,
or to just leave comments.
Follow us on Twitter at School Sucks Show. Subscribe to our YouTube channel, username School Sucks Podcast, and get involved in our Facebook group. Just search for School Sucks Project.
Hey, everybody, this is Brett. Welcome back to School Sucks Podcast 4.0. This is SSP Productivity Month. We're moving right along here, aren't we? And this is the second show focused on time management. This show belongs, for me, in the top five interviews I've ever done. I love this discussion. It is with Kevin Cruz. He is a New York Times bestselling author, a Forbes columnist, and an entrepreneur. And he joins me today for a discussion primarily focused, even though we cover a lot, it is primarily focused on what he says is an extremely powerful productivity tool. And it's one I left behind a long time ago, around the time I was introduced to getting things done. It is called a calendar. And if you're like me, this conversation is going to blow your mind. Steve, don't we have sound effects? There we go. Sorry, Steve is our production intern and he's new, so sometimes he misses his cues a little bit. He is also imaginary, which creates a whole separate set of problems. Oh, Steve, that was a good one. But I do want to thank a real person who works behind the scenes at the show. His name's Ryan Buckner, and he is the one who suggested Kevin as a guest, and I'm so glad he did. I look forward to working with Kevin again in the future. The book that we focus on today, 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management. Subtitle, you ready for this? The Productivity Habits of 7 Billionaires, 13 Olympic Athletes, 29 Straight-A Students, we'll talk about that, don't worry, and 239 entrepreneurs. And with all that data, you might ask, what types of time management tools and strategies keep coming up again and again? We're going to talk about it today. Thanks so much for listening, everybody. Stay tuned after the show for new subscriber geography trivia, won't you? And we've got a busy week next week to finish up this month. We've got Kevin Geary, our third Kevin of the month. It's just been that kind of a month, folks. Jake DeSillis will be back to talk about habits, and then we'll wrap up with our show about mastermind groups. Thanks again for all of the engagement and feedback and suggestions related to the topic this month. We're off to a great start for 2016. Thanks so much for listening. I hope you find today's show valuable. I think only an insane person wouldn't, frankly. But let's get to it. Here is Kevin Cruz.
We'll be right back. hear me?
Kevin, yes, you sound terrific. Do I sound okay to you?
You also sound terrific. You obviously know what you're doing on the other end of that microphone.
Thank you so much for taking time out of your day to do this. I really appreciate it.
Oh, I appreciate the invitation. I must admit, I wasn't familiar with your podcast before being contacted, but I love your mission, and I've been listening to recent episodes. In fact, I just finished up your goal setting episode this morning. I split it over two treadmill sessions, and I loved it. I mean, I just loved the productivity theme, of course, and the conversation, you know, you're having. It's great. I love what you're doing.
I'm really glad to hear that. Thanks for checking it out. I just put out another one today. It's productivity all month, as you probably picked up.
Right.
So that's how you fit in. And this is actually a kind of a neglected topic. Hey, I'm already recording, so let's just say we've already started. You know, let's make the most of our time. I think the first question, I think it would be almost inconsiderate not to ask, how many minutes did you allocate for this discussion?
I allocated a full hour.
Dang, that's awesome, because I do see myself having potentially a lot of questions. I was really excited about this conversation because, I don't know, I felt a little apprehensive going into it, like, at the end of this, I could wind up having to rethink several of my current habits. But
well,
that's exciting.
Yeah, and I mean I'm glad you're open to it, and you know, we might agree to disagree on some best practices here, because I know that you've been following, you know, David Allen's Getting Things Done, and you sounds like it's done some good things for you. But I think that makes it going to be an even better conversation.
Absolutely. So let me just introduce you to my audience. You are a New York Times bestselling author for the book 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management. You're also a serial entrepreneur. Your website is kevincruz.com. And I wanted you just to talk a little bit about your background, since my audience is unfamiliar. And then I do have to ask, this is a little bit self-serving, considering that you are a highly successful and productive person, I noticed that you did in the email exchange, and as you already mentioned, expressed a bit of delight about the title of our program. So I might also, considering, you know, your station and your achievements, like to hear a little bit of your thoughts in this introduction about the schooling process.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, Brett, as you described it, I'm sort of a reformed serial entrepreneur. I growing up, my father was an entrepreneur, and not a very successful one, but I got the bug from him and started my very first business right out of college. I was the first kid in my family to go to college, work my way through Rutgers, and the day after graduation started my first business, and promptly failed. One year later, you know, I discovered the first way not to succeed in business. And I tried again, and that company failed. And it was the third one that everything kind of came together. And I sold that company when I was 30 years old, and, you know, did pretty well on that exit, and then did another company, and then yet another. And each time after getting through the first couple of failures, pretty much each company was exponentially bigger than the one before. And so it was, oh, I don't know, about 6 or 7 years ago that I sold my business. And, you know, I've got, I'm a single dad with three kids. And I thought, you know, instead of diving into the next entrepreneurial adventure, you know, let me pursue another one of my passions, which is writing. And I've now written 6 books. And as you mentioned, had some success with that. But, you know, was focused more in the leadership and traditional business topics, but time and productivity has always been a passion of mine, partly because I was so bad at it when I was in my 20s. And time is life. Without time, you know, nothing else matters. So, everyone says, well, do we really need another time management book on the planet? And you know, I just think the fact that so many people have read the books that are out there, have gone through the training programs that are out there, and are still feeling overworked and overwhelmed, or they're not getting as much done as they'd like, shows that I think there's room for deeper exploration on the topic.
Absolutely. And that's where your book is going to come into this discussion. The title again, 15 Secrets Successful People Know About Time Management. And your process for this book was you went out and interviewed, what, over 200 people who were experiencing high levels of success across a pretty wide variety of fields, right?
Yeah, I didn't want to write a book just based on what I think is true and all the rest. So the first thing I did was I did what I think is the biggest study ever done on productivity is thousands of people survey research into companies. And then I did interviews with as many highly successful people as I could find, including seven billionaires. And, you know, Mark Cuban was one of them, 13 Olympic athletes, about half of whom are training for the upcoming Rio Olympics. I wanted to find out what straight A students are doing despite the flawed system. You know, what are the A students doing? So interviewed a lot of Ivy League college straight A students, as well as straight A high school students. And then over 200 entrepreneurs, co-founders of Facebook and Groupon, right on down to a lot of solopreneurs who are, you know, just running a great, successful, a very successful business, you know, from their home or office. And I was always just leading with a very open-ended question, which is, what's your number one secret to productivity, to extreme productivity? Or if you had to give advice about time management, what would you tell someone? And I just analyzed all that and coded it. And that's where, you know, I looked for the commonalities among all those. So it was quite a fun project. I'd never approached a book project quite like that before. And it was very rewarding.
Was stress reduction a qualification in time management strategies?
Yes, it certainly was in all of my survey research. In fact, I asked a battery of questions around their time management practices. So how they use a to-do list, how they use a calendar, how they prioritize. And I even asked whether they've had any time management training or GTD training. And then I would ask, now these were all self-reports, but levels of their own self-reported levels of productivity, stress, energy, and happiness were the four outcome measures that I looked at.
Interesting. Now, one of the most valuable things that I've taken away from checking out your work over the course of the last week is this concept of 1,440 minutes. That's how many minutes there are in a day. When I first started investigating productivity on my show in 2013, after I had been doing this, in addition to in the early years of doing this, I've been doing this a little over 6 years, this show. I was also running an SAT tutoring business up here in New Hampshire. And it occurred to me at the time that I was pretty much just thinking that there were endless amounts of time in a week, right? Right. I was thinking about time in terms of weeks and months. So if anybody asked me for anything, I would say, you bet. I mean, there's got to be, what, 500, 600 hours in a week, you know? So now, of course, I'm way off, but that was how I thought.
I like that.
Yeah, what, 160 what? How many are there?
168, but it shows that is how our mind works.
Yep.
The average person thinks there's much more time than there is in a week, a month, a year, or a lifetime.
Yeah, so that was why I wanted to start with the 1,440 minutes, because as I've listened to your interviews and read some of your articles, and even just talking to you, this is the first 10 minutes we've ever talked to each other in our lives. I'm thinking, for a guy who has his life planned down to minutes, you seem eerily relaxed. and so I'm wondering how that's accomplished, and that's why I asked about that qualifier of stress relief. But why don't we just start by talking about why that's such an important concept to embrace?
Yeah, and I'm glad you started there, because, you know, I say 1440 is literally the number that can change your life. Because, you know, when I mean, if I interview over 200 successful people, they're not all doing exactly the same thing, the exact same habits. There's a large overlap, but most of them aren't exactly the same. But the one thing that just came screaming out from everybody I talked to who's really nailing extreme productivity without that stress, without being overworked and overwhelmed, is they truly understand the value of time. And you'll hear them talk about minutes. And Brett, just like you started, a tell on someone who is not very productive they don't talk about time at all, or they're always saying yes because their mind, it's actually a cognitive problem where they can't really conceptualize, you know, my term paper's due in 3 months, that project's due at the end of the year, whatever it might be. They don't have a concept of that time. Average to good performers will think about hours usually. They'll talk about only so many hours in the day. Man, I was talking to these ultra successful people. They were all talking about minutes. And we all are quick to say, yeah, I know time is our most important asset. I get it. But to really feel it, I mean, you know, money, I know lots of people who have lost all their money and then made it again. I know people who have lost their health and got it back again. Relationships go and come back. Once our minutes are gone, they're never coming back. And, you know, so I would hear things, the Olympic gymnast Shannon Miller, she's, I think she's before your time, but, you know, won tons of gold medals, and she's got her own, you know, business now as well. And she said, from back when she was an athlete to today running her own business, her life is scheduled down to the minute. Most people, when you open up your calendar, whether you're using Outlook or Google Calendar, you know, the default setting is usually 30 minutes or 1 hour. Yeah. Everybody schedules a meeting for an hour. Everyone schedules a phone call for half an hour. Ultra productive people, they're changing it down to usually 15 minutes. Jordan Harbinger, he does the Art of Charm podcast. You know, he told me, schedule your entire day into 15-minute blocks. It sounds like a pain, but this will set you up in the 95th percentile. And that's kind of the advice I heard over and over again.
You know, it seems like there's kind of a relationship management aspect to this as well. And I think there's an apprehension for me about thinking this way in terms of giving my time to other people, because I have started to think more about my time as money. And, you know, people ask for a chunk of my time, and I just try to reframe it as, what if they ask me for $40? You know,
exactly.
Just some stranger who's, hey, Brett, I like your show. Can I have $60? Yeah, that would be a weird email. And I think back to the early days of my career, I was a teacher. And I was trying to restructure this specialized program that I was in charge of. And I was meeting with the people who ran this private school that I worked at a lot. And I remember going into the executive director's office, and he said something. I still remember this because of how I felt. He said, Brett, you have 8 minutes for a meeting.
Right.
And I said, well, damn, you know, I'm worth 8 minutes. and I do find, though, that I'll start a Skype call, or I'll start, you know, a face-to-face social interaction, and this anxiety almost builds in me. Like, even if I enjoy the person's company, even if I get a lot out of talking to them, I still am thinking, like, how long is this going to take? How long am I going to be here? You know. So, do you know of any ways to mitigate that? Do you know that experience? Can you identify with that?
I definitely can. And I mean, the first thing I wanted to comment on is, Brett, that's a great strategy that I would actually encourage. One of the easiest things to do is to convert your time into money. Either, you know, if you're working in a company, figure out what you're being paid and add on top of that for, you know, taxes and insurance or whatever, and divide that by the number of minutes that you're being paid for each week. And now you're going to truly understand the cost of sitting in that meeting or taking a longer break or whatever it is. And as an entrepreneur or a self-employed person, you can even be aspirational. You know, whether you want to make $10,000 this year as a side hustle, or $100,000 or million, whatever your number is your number, divide that back into the number of minutes a week that you want to work. And that's going to give you some sense of the value of your time. And you might all of a sudden have an easier time turning down those got a minute meetings, or let's catch up, or at least be more mindful of it. And I think that when you master your minutes and you think about your minutes, it's just comes down to really being mindful over what you value and how you want to invest your time as if it's money. And you know, the time for money thing that you're doing is great, Brett, but an even more powerful one, a little harder to do, is think about the impact. So, you know, you're trying to make an impact on the world. You're trying to reach a certain number of people with your message. And so if someone is sending you that email and says, hey, can you hop on the phone for 30 minutes? You're doing cool stuff. I'd like to get to know you. Well, they're not just trying to steal $100 out of your wallet, but they are stealing the impact you're making from the world, you know, for their own purpose. So it's up to you to decide, oh, you know what? I do value friendships and relationships and fun. Therefore, I will take this call for 30 minutes. Or you might say, this person's mission has nothing to do with mine. I'm going to say no, or something in between. You know, yes, but I've only got 15 minutes. And it was Dave Kirpin told me. Now, he's an entrepreneur, big social media guy. And he said that on this exact topic, in his mind, he realizes he wants to help strangers. He likes meeting new people every week. Mm-hmm. So he does allocate 1 hour a week. And it's the same day and time every single week. So it's first come, first serve. Even a stranger can hit him an email and say, hey, Dave, saw your stuff. I want to know if we could hop on the phone. And he'll say, all right, you know, click this link to schedule a 15-minute block. And it's, you know, he uses Calendly or one of those online tools to do it. And some people will get in that same week. And if it's all filled up, they might wait a week or two. But in his mind, it's not that he's stiff-arming all opportunities and strangers. It's that he's allocated 1 hour a week. And that's where the stress-free comes in. You know, when you've thought, okay, what is important to me this year, this quarter, this week, today? I've allocated, it's like putting down money on it or poker chips. You know, I value my health, so I'm going to put 60 poker chips on a workout today, you know, for 60 minutes of time.
Right.
I value fun, so I'll allocate this much time at the end of the day. And that's where once you've got it all figured out, you kind of just go through life knowing that you're hitting all the right buttons, you know, to be successful, defined by you.
Absolutely. I'm sure you're familiar with the quantified self movement.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think this relates really nicely to that as far as something that I talked about in our most recent show. Some people call it mindfulness. I would really call it a desire to live consciously across all our areas of responsibility in life. And when time is not one of the considerations in that, I mean, even when you talk about this gentleman, you know, scheduling 15-minute blocks, when you know you have 15 minutes, it's a more productive 15 minutes than, say, 30 or 40 minutes would be if it's just kind of open-ended, right?
That's right. And you know, your old boss who told you, hey, you got 8 minutes, you know, maybe they're that goes over well or not, depending on relationship, trust, et cetera. Mm-hmm. But when someone knows, you know, if someone walks in and they assume they've got 30 minutes, they might spend 15 minutes talking about, hey, how was your weekend? How was the game last night, et cetera? And if you are optimizing for productivity, that's a big if, but if you want to optimize your life or your day for productivity, telling that person, hey, you've only got 15 minutes, they're going to get to the point much earlier. And if they don't, that's obviously their own fault.
So in the end, it's kind of a balancing act between priorities of, you know, is this about relationship building? Is this about leisure? Or is this strictly about getting something done? And that's how maybe those would be the considerations in allocating time that way.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that I do get that a lot because of some of my extreme positions, you know, based on the research. And I tell people, listen, you know, if you're optimizing for having fun on vacation, I'm not suggesting that you go through all of these productivity habits while you're on vacation. You know, if you're not interested in being productive at night, you just want to hang out and have fun, do it. You know, it's just being, as you said, conscious about, okay, what am I trying to do? What am I trying to get done? How do I want to live my life? And then here are tools to use, you know, if you choose to.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So that's a nice transition. And I think this is where you're really going to start to blow my mind. This is what I said I wanted to talk to you about today. And I think there are going to be some overlap. There's going to be some overlap into other areas. The 1,440 minutes was one. There's going to be a couple others. But the primary focus, to-do lists don't work. This is bad news for me. I'm looking at mine right now. You're the last item to check on today's to-do list.
And it's going to feel good too, right?
I'm tempted to check it right now since this seems to be going well. We're going to get through this. I'm so addicted to these things. So, all right. Educate me and thousands of people that I've recommended to-do lists to in the past month.
Yeah. Well, Brett, here's, you know, first of all, if something like a to-do list is working for you and your listeners, you know, use what works. I'm not speaking from the top of a mountain here, but, you know, I got a clue as to this. Again, all those interviews I did, only about one or two people mentioned a to-do list. And when I would push them on it, even it turns out that what they're using instead of a to-do list is their calendar. Now, let me come back to the calendar in a minute, but a lot of people don't realize to-do list as an idea, you know, that's a tool that's over 110 years old. The legend is that this consultant named Ivy Lee back in 1910 or whatever, he told Charles Schwab, you know, who was running U.S. Steel, all of his executives to have a piece of paper, write six things down and, you know, work on number one until it's done, work on number two, et cetera, until it's time to go home. And, you know, that's kind of quaint. I mean, it's a different world now in terms of, you know, having to do so much more with less resources, with there's no such, you know, we're all in multiple time zones, working around the clock, having to do more with less. And to-do lists, task lists will work for average situations. If you don't, again, I'm looking at extreme productivity, really extreme levels of productivity. But what, when I dug deeper, there was a study done in just recently, 2015, that showed that 41% of items on a to-do list are never done at all. So it turns out, and half the items that are done on a to-do list are done the same day they're put on the list. So, you know, what that tells us is to-do lists for many people, perhaps most, it's the place where important but not urgent stuff goes to die. You know, it's like a nagging wish list.
Yes.
You know, there's no time boundaries on them. So most people will look at their to-do list and they check it throughout the day. That's the primary habit and flaw of a to-do list. So instead of doing what's important, they're going to do what's easy. Instead of doing what's important, they're going to do what's fast. Instead of doing what's important, they'll do what's urgent. And the other big problem with the to-do list is what the psychologists call the Zeigarnik effect, after a psychologist named Zeigarnik. And it basically says that our unconscious is still thinking about things that it knows we have to do, but we don't have a plan for. So it to-do lists cause stress. The mind knows we got to do those things. So, you know, we've had a long day, we're going to bed, we're exhausted. And then our brain starts kicking in, thinking about that to-do list, and we have insomnia or stress or whatever that is. And the odd thing is that as soon as we put things from a to-do list, instead of it just being a task, we put it on a day and time on our calendar, even though we haven't done the task, that stress level goes down because the brain thinks, okay, that's taken care of. We know when and how that's going to get done. Don't need to worry about that anymore. So, you know, between the problem of the time, lack of time boundaries, the important stuff doesn't always get done when it should be. And the Zeigarnik effect suggests that it's, you know, causing undue stress.
All right. Well, let's talk about how something that you mentioned, to-do list not accounting for time. In my effort to save them in my system, what about incorporating something like the Pomodoro method, right? So what if I have, you know, that system of working set up and I can look at the list and then, you know, put things into Pomodoros based on time value? Is there some merit to that?
Absolutely. I'm a big fan of work sprints and Pomodoro. I'm sure you've covered it, and you know, for your listeners are familiar. In general, most Pomodoro sessions are about 25 minutes in length, and then you you know, take a 5-minute break. There's some research that suggests that maybe 50 to 55 minutes is a better work sprint. There's other productivity experts that say 90 minutes. Whether it's, you know, 25 minutes, 55 minutes, whatever it is, I'm a big fan of those work sprints. Literally having that clock counting you down changes your behaviors. And by going down your task list and saying, okay, that's a one Pomodoro, that's a two Pomodoro, that's a one Pomodoro, that's great because now you're giving some dimension of duration. So that's half the battle, is the duration issue. The other half of the battle, though, that I still think can be a challenge is not having a plan for which specific day you're going to work on it. And just quick example, Brett, you know, I know from listening to an earlier episode, and I don't know the timing of when it was recorded, but you were supposed to write, I think it was a foreword to a book. Is that right? Or an introduction to a book?
Yes.
And so I don't know how long that, you know, the author and you worked that out, you know, whether it was a month or 3 months. I get asked that kind of stuff all the time too. Hey, will you write the foreword of this book? It's due out in April or May. Oh, sure. No problem. And then the challenge, though, is when that sits on the task list, you look at your day or you look at your week and you're going to gravitate to, you know what, I got another podcast to get out the door. That's more urgent than writing that forward to the book.
You read my mind. Wow. Because I did that for a month.
And even if you've attached, oh, wow, that forward is going to be 8 Pomodoros. You know, I know how many Pomodoros that's going to be. It doesn't get it onto your calendar. You don't all of a sudden attack it right away. Now, so what's the consequences of that? Okay, for some, there could be no consequences. Like you may have eventually gotten to it on time and it's of superior quality. That's a great outcome. For many, they're either going to blow the deadline, literally not get to it in time and blow the deadline on something, or they're going to do it to meet the deadline, but the quality is going to suffer. All of a sudden, it's delayed because we know how to do a podcast. That podcast is due in 2 days. You know, boom, we're always going into our comfort zone. This harder but important item gets put off. So now it's like, it's due tomorrow morning at 7. It's 7 p.m. I'll pull an all-nighter and work on it. It's probably not the quality that it should be. So I hope, I really hope in your case, but in general for your listeners, even if you've got time boundaries and you're prioritizing, if it's not on your calendar, those important but hard things tend to get put off, and therefore the quality of delivery goes down, or you just blow your deadline, one or the other.
Yeah, and see, this is the real challenge for me, because what I had actually advised before, and this was really as a result of embracing David Allen's getting things done method, was what goes on your calendar is hard scheduled appointments. And that's it. And I think we have to scale up for a minute here, because there's a foundation that needs to be in place with respect to, I think, clarity of purpose and motivation towards that purpose. My problem was that a calendar wound up being a visual representation of broken commitments to myself. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that was, when I first started using like Google Calendar, I would have different colored blocks for, 2 to 3, the gym, that's green. And then, 3:30 to 5 is work, and that's red. And I was really, really excited about, I took a lot of time to set it up. And in the end, it was beautiful. I said, that's going to be a great week. Look at all those colors. And look at all those things filled in. And then it just didn't happen because I didn't think I had the, the other thing that Alan uses a lot is mind like water. Something unexpected would hit and it would completely throw me off. And I would say, well, there's no way I can go to the gym at 2 o'clock today because and now I feel like I'm so much better about so many of the other elements of this that it actually is worth revisiting, because I do see a lot of the benefits that you're talking about here. So let me give you an example. Emails, right? I heard you say some people might just set 45 minutes a day for emails, and we call this batching, right?
Right.
Basically, this to me is a brilliant idea, because I still will find, a lot of the time I spend, Kevin, is editing. And editing is basically just sitting there watching a waveform go by.
Right.
And cutting things out of it and then adding things to it. But there's extra available mental energy, I feel, and it creates this temptation to multitask, which is disastrous. So that's why I tried to really start using the Pomodoro, was to make those work blocks shorter. I mean, I could sit, and if I'm working on audio or a video, depending on how into the project I am, I could do it for 3 hours straight. I've looked up before and looked out the window from behind my computer monitor and said, wow, it's nighttime. Have I eaten? Right. And I don't like my life out of balance like that. So the idea of batching, and this I think this relates to the Pomodoro conversation, is setting a specific time block to do something. Like, okay, I'm going to edit for 25 minutes, and then I'm going to get my face away from my computer monitor for at least 5 minutes. That, and not, you know, not pick up my phone and go to Facebook or play words with friends or right. or check email. Get away, get up, walk around, breathe, go outside. I was experimenting with the blocks a little bit. And sometimes I would work for like, you know, I tried 50 minutes and then I would just go outside and like walk around for 10 minutes. And I found that really beneficial.
Yeah, Brett, you this is, I mean, for your listeners, what you just described is gold. And that's where a lot of people get the Pomodoros wrong, is they'll say, oh, I'm working on this really hardcore task for my 25 minutes. Timer goes off. Good. Now I get to go for 5 minutes and check emails or read Facebook. And it doesn't work like that. You know, what this is all about is, you know, what we're talking about, you know, time management, productivity. You know, I'm the first to say the words time management in my book title are there for discovery purposes, for search engine purposes. I hate the term because we're not really managing time. What we need to manage is attention. It's attention management, not time management. And so the front part of our brain, the prefrontal cortex, they call that the CEO of the brain. You know, it's what controls decision making and impulse control. It's creativity. It's all the good stuff. And it runs on glucose, which is just blood sugar. So as we're, and literally the more taxed our brain is, the more fuel we're burning, the more glucose we're burning in our brain. All the glucose that our body takes in, most of it's burned in our brain. So for 25 minutes, we're really stressing the battery. We're really, you know, guzzling a lot of gas. That timer goes up. If you start reading emails or reading the newspaper or doing other things, so reading is very taxing. Having a conversation that is like you're trying to have a debate or an argument or an educational one, that's very taxing. So you need to recover. You just did your sprint. You now need to recover and rest for that 5 to 10 minutes. So exactly what you said, getting up and moving around, taking some deep breaths, walking outside, you know, doing a yoga pose, whatever your thing is, but something physical that reoxygenates, gets the blood flowing, and lets your brain rest for that time period. And that was the big lesson for me is, I mean, for years, I would just feel that deadline of like another book deadline, or I've got to get this chapter done today. So I would power through thinking, I'm just focused and productive by going 6 straight hours without a break at the word processor. Well, you know, it's the old adage about you got to sharpen the saw. I would have been much better off resting every 30 minutes so that when I did get back, I was really flowing and more productive and faster. The quality of your thinking is better.
Absolutely. Since we're going to have time, I'm looking at the counter right now. We are going to have time. I want to return to some strategies for attention management, but I have a couple more specific questions about working from the calendar.
Right.
First of all, when we're talking about batching, a scheduled event on my calendar, let's say 45 minutes, because I'm going to reorganize it into 15 minute time chunks. Is there a kind of mental preparation that you do? Because you also talk about work sprints, which I guess could be longer, right?
Right, right.
So is there a kind of mental preparation you do for getting ready to do a work sprint or to do a significant batching of something that isn't terribly exciting?
Yeah. So when it comes to the calendar, I mean, the first thing is, and this is, again, a key distinction from a to-do list and a key difference, you know, that I have from GTD, which is, again, a lot of people will use the calendar for official appointments and meetings and phone calls. I am suggesting everything gets put on the calendar. So you make an appointment with yourself using your calendar. Now, the other dimension other than time, though, is energy. So it goes back to this idea of energy management and realizing that we are not as productive and powerful at the end of the day as we are at the beginning of the day. You know, glucose drains out and we get tired. The only thing that really replenishes is sleep. So there's the, you know, behavioral psychologist Dan Ariely talks about this a lot, where he says we are most productive about 1 to 2 hours after we've woken up in the morning.
Amen.
And, you know, what a shame that so many of us, first thing we do, we get to the desk, we go into the office, whatever it is, and we open up email and we start slinging emails, or we want to clear the pile on our desk, so we start signing expense reports or booking our trip to Las Vegas. You know, we do silly stuff with our brain power time. So the first thing with the calendar is to really look at all those tasks that maybe right now are sitting on your to-do list and say, okay, the brain intensive stuff, the most important stuff, I am going to work on in the morning. The less taxing stuff or the less important stuff, I'm going to work on in the afternoon. So right there, there's a shift. And an important concept on this is, you know, what I call your MIT or your most important task.
Sure.
And, you know, Brett, this is similar to what I've heard you talk about before. You know, you've got your goals or your projects, and you break those down into a series of, you know, steps or tasks. And ideally you've lined them up like dominoes. So in the GTD language, you know what your next action is to advance that.
Right.
And, you know, practically speaking, I mean, if you work in a company right now, you know, your workplace most important task isn't the thing that's going to keep you from getting fired, all that busy work. It's the thing that's probably going to get you promoted. You know, what is the item this year that would max out your bonus or line you up for that promotion? What is the number one thing your boss most cares about? You know, if you're an entrepreneur, you need to be thinking about, okay, you know, if I want to double the size of my business in 1 year, what's the number one thing that's going to make that happen? And whether that's, you know, hire a new vice president of sales or launch that e-learning course, that online course, you've got the thing that's going to take your business to the next level. Working on that thing is your most important task. And so for me, I've got, I don't use as many colors as you, but I've got my time blocks. And every morning, I try to do a 90-minute block of MIT time, most important task time. Now, I will have that block sticking out as a recurring daily appointment. And that tells me, hey, don't go make a breakfast meeting with somebody unless it's really an extreme case. Don't say yes to the dentist when they throw that first option at you that's during your MIT time. Don't schedule a phone call. Leave Facebook closed. So I'm really strict on that MIT time. Now, my MIT might change day to day or week to week. So back to your question, Brett, about how do you look at that calendar? You know, I do like to make sure that at the end of one day, I've planned the next day. And so I've usually planned it. And the first thing in the morning, I'm looking at that calendar and on that MIT. I mean, for me, from an author standpoint, a lot of days it's, you know, write the freaking book. You know, put my butt in the chair and write the book.
Mm-hmm.
If the book is written, it might be do some marketing. You know, I have a very specific thing that might change a bit day to day, but that MIT time is sacred. Now, I, by default, will... You know, it's not a coincidence to me that we're doing this podcast interview in the afternoon. And after yours, I've got another one. After that one, I've got a newspaper interview. So I try to schedule conversations, interviews, phone calls, you know, in my afternoons. And lastly, similar to the one gentleman who just has an hour a week, I always put a 30-minute band of time that says return phone calls. Now, sometimes I don't have phone calls to return. Mm-hmm. And I'll use that time to either reach out to friends or family or to other people or to catch up. Because as you said, life does happen and some things have to get moved. But I've got that time block to use if I need it. I mean, that's just sort of a quick way I look at it. And I literally, it sounds corny, Brett, but when I look at my calendar morning, I reinforce, I say, all right, how am I going to win the day? How am I going to win the day? Preferably by noon. So if I can get 1,500 words written in my MIT time and everything else all goes to hell, I still would have won the day, you know, or if I at least make a decision on that book cover in my MIT time and then the school calls and I've got to go pick up sick kids, at least I've still won the day. And so I think, you know, you're right. Life does happen. But knowing what is your MIT, scheduling that when your brain is strongest And then having lesser priorities, you know, scheduled later in the day is just a big way to using your calendar as a real, real good tool.
Okay. So I there's two things here that you said that I really like. Yes, life is happening all around us, but for 90 minutes in the morning, I can be in a underground fortress, essentially.
Absolutely.
Yes. All right. So that's a great idea. And I do, I have as part of my morning routine, I do have a follow-up question about setting up the calendar. I guess I can ask it really quickly. You do that every morning? You set up your calendar for the day?
Well, I generally like to set up my, at the end of today, I will have already set up my tomorrow.
Okay.
Now, I do use, like you mentioned, though, I mean, I try to have some recurring blocks. I do have a morning routine, you know, that is on the calendar. I have my MIT time on the calendar. I'm recommitting to my fitness. So I noticed I was getting a little sloppy with my meals and afternoon snacks. So I'm even calendaring those. But then it's okay to have open time on my calendar, and it will either get filled with something or I will purposely, you know, leave it blank as that buffer time.
Gotcha. So I just, my excitement here was about the MIT is part of my morning routine. After I, you know, look at my calendar and create a to-do list from what's on my calendar, plus other things that are, you know, actions or next actions pulled out of projects that I'm currently working on, I do what I call morning work block. And I've realized, yeah, that is higher value time for creativity for me. So I do 3 Pomodoros. And then usually eat breakfast and go for a walk. So I really like it when people who know what they're talking about and have talked to hundreds of people who also know what they're talking about tell me that the thing I'm already doing is a good idea.
It's a great idea. You're nailing it. You're a time productivity ninja.
I'm getting there. Awesome. And the other one, this idea of scheduling time for something like phone calls. There's so many people in my life where I was like, oh, you know, I wish I could catch up with so-and-so. But then if a day came where I had no calls to return, and those days, you know, I don't do a lot on the phone, so those days certainly come, and I suddenly had a block of phone time scheduled on a calendar, I could call my friend Steve, I could call my friend Tony, I could call my friend Stephanie, you know, and just people I haven't talked to in a while, and I could catch up with them. And that's also really attractive to me, because so often it's just like this resignation of, oh, well, I wish I could talk to people, but right. When would that be possible? So I'm coming around on this. I like this calendar idea.
And Brett, you know what that does? I mean, yeah. It just gives you a fighting chance for those relationships, because you're right. If it's not on the calendar at all, it's not on your next action list. You're never really going to do it. Now, what could still happen, and it happens to me, you know, I'll see that phone time, and because it's not, they don't know I'm calling or it's not an official appointment, if I'm feeling the stress of being behind on something else, I might say, I'm not going to use my phone a friend time. I'm going to go work on this other marketing item, or I'm going to write a check or whatever it is. But that gets back to just really understanding our values, because people who are not mindful at all of what they want, they never find, really make that time for that workout, for their friends, whether it's to call their parents or to call their kids. Date nights get put off week after week after week because so much to do in the office. It's a busy time of year in the office. So you can put it on the calendar and we will still end up bumping it if we're feeling that stress, but we just need to anchor it back into what do we truly value? You know, I don't mean values like in a squishy word, just what do we value in our life? If we value our marriage, then we should stick to the date night commitment. If we value our friendship with Steve, we should say, all right, well, what does that mean? Does that mean I should talk to Steve at least once a month, once a week, once a quarter? I will commit to that. So it's always just going back to really being thoughtful about it.
Yes, absolutely. And I said in a recent show that this program Evernote, if I hadn't come across it when I did, I imagine I might be in an insane asylum right now. What apps or systems do you use specifically for a calendar so you can have this information synced across all your devices like Evernote allows?
Yeah, I keep it fairly simple. I use Evernote, but I don't use it the way you do, and I'm not a power user. I think Evernote for me is a great note capturing and retrieval system. I find when I'm sitting at the desk, I use it daily for I'm doing screen captures or snapping articles and bookmarks and things. But I still love the old-fashioned notebook. And I will find that often I'm writing a note and then I'll take a picture of it and send it into Evernote. But I still like taking a lot of notes by hand. And when it comes to the calendar, for myself, I just use Google Calendar on the desktop. And then I've got it, hooked up on the smartphone as well. And that's all I use. I know there's fancier systems than that. But I just need to be able to, put those time blocks and appointments in and make sure the phone is synced to the desktop, and that's it.
All right. Yeah. So that's what I use as well. And you find Evernote to be a reliable capture tool, but there are others that you use as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So I heard an interview that you did on a show called Eventual Millionaire that I really, really enjoyed. And you talked about three C's, and we just talked about one of them, capturing everything. We talked about calendars. That was a big one. And I'm enthusiastic about giving this a try, I have to say. You've made quite an excellent case for this. And because there were a lot of other things before when I was trying to use calendars, it was before I had any embrace of a productivity system. So of right. course I was going to fail. I didn't have goals clarified. I didn't have, the purposes above those goals clarified. I didn't have, a means of managing new work as it came across my desk. So the calendar was obviously going to fail and be right. that visual representation of broken commitments. So now I think I have a steady enough footing that it might be worth trying again. So those were the first two C's. The third one, and you did mention it in this conversation, along with attention management, concentration. And one of the things that I heard you talk about, since we do have about 15 minutes left here, was diet and habit outside of, doing work. And, right. The things in addition to sleep and mindfulness and food and drink that you're doing to support energy and concentration. So I wanted to give you a few minutes just to talk about that, because we talk about that a lot on my show.
Yeah, and this was, again, a big surprise from the research. Again, my open-ended question was, tell me your best productivity advice. And I expected to get some habit or tip or trick or app or whatever. A lot of people talked about energy, and it goes back to, it's not really about time. It's about getting the most with the time we have, getting the most attention and focus and concentration. So how do you maximize and, more importantly, maintain energy throughout the day? You covered a lot of them. I mean, it begins with sleep, but before everybody just shuts the podcast off saying, 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
I don't pretend that too many people these days can get 8 hours of sleep. I hope you can. It's good advice, but it's not very practical. What matters more when it comes to productivity is the amount of deep sleep that you have. So there's sleep cycles. We go into a light sleep, which is our REM sleep and our dream sleep, but it's that deep restorative sleep that recharges the brain, the mind, and anchors those memories. So even if you can't, the good news is most deep sleep happens in the first four to five hours of sleep. Then it's mainly gets more into the light sleep. So I talk about, think about your bedroom as a sleep sanctuary. What can you do to make sure that you're falling asleep quickly and you stay asleep? And for a lot of people, and I was one of them, I back when I was young and dumb and doing it the wrong way, I mean, I was just a fiend on coffee and Red Bulls.
Yeah.
And there was a sleep expert that I was talking to at a conference. And I said, no, it's not a problem. I said, I could fall asleep within a minute at any time of day or night. I could 11 o'clock at night, my head hits the pillow, I'm out. He says, Kevin, that's not a sign that caffeine it has no effect. It's a sign of just how truly exhausted you are. And he says, what's happening is you have fallen asleep, but the caffeine is elevating your brainwave. You're staying in the light sleep. You're not getting down into that deep sleep. And of course, now you mentioned the quantified, measurement movements, and I've done sleep studies, and I'm wearing sleep devices to monitor it, and it really is amazing. I mean, the first thing is, the first rule is just don't be taking in things like caffeine, with 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours before you go to bed. Don't consume alcohol 4 to 6 hours before you go to bed. Alcohol will help you to fall asleep quickly, but it rebounds you and you're in shallow sleep again. Don't use your digital devices within 2 hours of going to bed because of the blue light that hits you that tells your brain to stay awake. There's glasses you can buy to filter it out if you want to, use your digital devices. But you want to get yourself, your body prepped for that deep sleep. And then, of course, you want to create a sleep sanctuary that is as dark as possible, as quiet as possible. Tell your bedmate to stop jostling you, when they come to bed. You don't want that TV on while you're trying to sleep. Lock the pets into another room or the basement so they're not jumping on you all night. And we don't remember that we're waking up or coming up into that shallow sleep because we're not conscious. But it's all those things I mentioned can ruin our deep sleep. So, I mean, that's one of them. On that, I don't know how often you guys talk about sleep as a productivity weapon.
I was thinking about doing a whole series on it at one point because I really got into tracking my sleep and journaling about changes. But then there's that whole other aspect to it. You're right. You're talking about the quality of sleep. Like I would wake up in the morning, and if it said anything from 7.4 to 8.1 hours, I'd high five myself, thinking that I was off to a great start. But the idea of going to bed without, looking at Imgur for 15 or 20 minutes, that's horrifying to me.
Right,
now, there
right.
are the rose-colored glasses that you mentioned, and there is apps you can install on right. phones and computers like Flux. But yeah, it still is a worthwhile consideration to change those habits so the quality of sleep improves. And what about diet?
Yeah, again, this was, when I was trying to win through hustle a lot of years ago, I was doing that typical thing where I'd wake up, jump out of bed, do the 5-minute shower, and start heading into work trying to get a jump on the day. And I wasn't hungry. I was a little tired. So I'd stop at the 7-Eleven and get a cup of coffee, and I would just drink coffee through the morning and think, I'm saving calories. I'm not hungry and saving a few calories. But then by the time lunch would hit, or I'd look up from all that work and it's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock, I'd be famished. I'd want something quick, and I'd end up, with some junk food or a slice of pizza at my desk. I'd work, power through the afternoon on Red Bulls and, get home and microwave some leftovers, and that was it. And what I didn't realize, again, when your prefrontal cortex runs out of glucose, runs down, they say it's almost like a drunk who's trying to drive home at the end of the party. They don't know how drunk they are when everyone around them is like, hey, Kevin, give us your keys. Ah, no, I'm okay. It's one of those things where you don't realize it's happening. So when we wake up in the morning, we've already, we've already fasted for, 6 to 8-ish hours, depending, or more if we didn't eat, before that. And our blood glucose levels, if we were to measure them, are low. That's why if you go and get a blood test, your doctor wants to get a blood test, it's usually in the morning. And if it's fasting, they say, don't eat anything after 9 o'clock at night. So those tests show what your blood sugar or cholesterol, whatever, is without anything in your system. So we start out the morning with low fuel. And so when I was drinking coffee until 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I mean, I was just completely draining my brain of the juice that it needed to, be happy, optimistic, energetic, good decisions, creative, sharp, focused, clarity. I mean, every metric. And the danger then is when we starve ourselves and then eat that slice of pizza or that big sub sandwich, we then start that carb cycle where we take a big processed carbohydrate into our body
right.
that spikes our blood sugar too high. Our body then, puts it out with a bunch of insulin. And now our blood sugar crashes. So we want to take a nap in the afternoon. We go into a food coma. Mm-hmm. We're zombieing out through the rest of the day. And so all of a sudden, when you understand that our energy drives our productivity and food is fuel, it changes. You know, ultra productive people, they're waking up and they're guzzling a big glass of water because we start out about 1% dehydrated by the time we wake up in the morning. So they're hydrating in the morning. They're eating, they're not skipping breakfast, and they're eating usually a low carb or a slow carb meal. I like to use protein because it keeps you from getting hungry. You know, so whether for some people, you know, it's egg whites and things. I am a fan of protein shakes. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll throw a bunch of greens in mine or whatever that is. But then every 3 hours, you're feeding your body. It might be a handful of almonds. It might be a banana. You know, lunch, again, we generally overdo the carbs. You know, white bread is bad if you're going to do it. Maybe it's one piece of bread on the sandwich instead of two. So the idea is just to feed the body a little bit throughout the day. And, you know, the other thing I get, Brett, is like sometimes people will say, well, that's not what so-and-so says. They say if you want to burn off your fat, you should starve until 3 p.m. so your body goes into ketosis and burns all your fat. I'm like, well, yes, if you want to optimize for fat burn,
yeah,
starve yourself all day so your body goes into ketosis. But that's not optimizing for your brain. If you want to optimize for brain productivity, you're going to be on a steady glucose, low carb or slow carb diet throughout the day.
We can actually bridge that gap a little bit. And this is something that I've been doing for the last 3 years. Joe Rogan markets this on his show as caveman coffee, and Dave Asprey. And there's caveats about, him, but
yeah,
he markets it as bulletproof coffee. This was an absolute life-changing thing for me because I was never a breakfast person. I even used to smoke cigarettes. So you get up, you make a cup of coffee, and you start puffing away on cigarettes. You are not hungry. And then suddenly, right. So there's all of the negative effects for brain concentration, productivity, but also significant effects on health. And this is when I was younger. But now I wake up and I do this coffee that is enhanced with, you know, coconut oil, which is a good healthy fat, and maybe a little grass-fed butter. And then maybe after I've been up for a couple hours, I say, I feel like having 2 hard-boiled eggs. And that's a reasonable thing to have.
Before,
I would wake up, and I drink 1 cup of this coffee in the morning, and that is enough. And it kind of seems to slowly distribute the caffeine throughout the early part of the day. I would wake up before, drink 3 or 4 cups of coffee, the 2 hard-boiled eggs, that wouldn't even occur to me. It would be 3 o'clock, and I wouldn't say 2 hard-boiled eggs would be nice. I would say, you know, the Chinese buffet would be nice because I was in a state of madness, from not having my brain properly fed and also from being starved. Now, so I recommend that. I mean, everybody can look into that for themselves, but for coffee lovers who do maybe defer eating a little bit further into the day. I don't defer it as much as I used to, but that has been really helpful for me. Now, we are out of time, so I would like to invite you back at some point in the future to talk about entrepreneurship. We this year, 2016, we're spending whole months devoted to themes. Entrepreneurship is going to be one that is coming soon. At that time, I think that would be more appropriate a chance for us to deal with the first question I asked you today that we actually didn't get to, your thoughts about schooling versus education. Would you be willing to come back and do that?
Yeah, Brett, that would be a lot of fun. And you're right. I blabbed on about something else and we didn't get to that fun topic.
We
got
did
3
fantastic.
Kids in school, so I have a lot of strong thoughts on it for sure.
Yeah, that was one of the best first conversations that I ever had with anybody in my life. And I thank you so much for everything that you added to the show and to this topic for the month. So can you give your website, any books that you want people to look at before we let you go, Kevin?
Oh, thanks, Brett. I mean, the easiest thing to do is my website is masteryourminutes.com. Or if anyone's on their smartphone, they can send a text to 44222. Just send the word achieve, and it will send you some time management tools in your email.
Awesome. That's terrific. Well, I want to thank you so much. I really, really enjoyed this, and I'm sure that the people in the audience will as well. I will be back in touch with you at some point in the future, and I would really look forward to doing this again.
Thanks, Brett. Appreciate it.
All right, Kevin. Take care. And that's the end.
Awesome. How'd that go for your audience?
That was terrific. That was really good. Amazing. I can't believe that was an hour, but that was that was great. We covered everything that I wanted to cover and more.
Yeah, I've done a lot of these, but you are great. I mean, it's so conversational and you're using your own life experience from it. Like, I mean, this feels awesome. So you're doing it great. I know you're an old pro at it, but
Awesome. I really appreciate you saying that too. Yeah, we've been at it 6 years and we're always trying to get better so we can go to the next level. So when we get to we're kind of building on this productivity theme throughout the year. So I will definitely get back in touch with you when we're going to talk about entrepreneurship, and I'd love to have you back.
Yeah, that sounds good. Well, good luck, and let me know when I can promote this episode, and then I look forward to coming back.
Absolutely. I'll send you the link when it's done.
All right. Thanks, Brett.
All right. Take care, Kevin.
Yep.
Bye. That was a great interview. This ain't a children's show. Hi, today's new subscriber is Artemis C. from Arlington, Virginia. We all know about Arlington, Virginia for its famous landmarks like Arlington National Cemetery and the Pentagon. And wouldn't it be easy for me to come on here and be like, ooh, did you know the Pentagon has 284 bathrooms? That's twice as many as they need. Why? Because it was built during segregation. But this ain't a children's show. One of Arlington's most interesting residents was a man named George Washington Park Custis, and he was born in 1771. Some of you might be asking, Brett, I noticed he has George Washington in his name. Any relation to the George Washington who was the president of the United States? Yes. He was the step-grandson of President George Washington, but the story gets more interesting. Custis's grandmother, Martha Dandridge Curtis, did indeed eventually marry George Washington, but that was not her first marriage. In fact, in May of 1750, she married a man named Daniel Park Curtis, a rich plantation owner 20 years older than her. They lived at a place called White House Plantation. You cannot make this shit up. And she had four children with him: Daniel, Francis, John, and Martha. Martha Jr. Now we're going to focus on her youngest son, John Park Custis. But first, in 1757, Daniel Park Custis, Martha's husband, dies, making her a rich widow at the age of 25. She single-handedly controls a dower inheritance for her lifetime, including 17,500 acres of land and 300 slaves. 2 years later, she marries old George Washington, the first president of the United States. So she had a backstory. Now together, George and Martha raise her son, John Park Custis, from the previous marriage. John Park Custis becomes an adult. He gives birth to children. He names one of them George Washington Park Custis, and then he dies. Just 6 months after George Washington Park Custis is born, the cause of death is something called camp fever. Ooh, I like the sound of that, but I guess it was pretty terrible, and that happens in Yorktown shortly after the British surrender there. So now we're in the 1780s, and George and Martha, who we know, have adopted the son of the son of Martha Washington from her first marriage, George Washington Park Custis. So once the step-grandson of President George Washington, he is now his adopted son. As a man, he spends a large part of his inherited fortune constructing the Arlington House, a plantation that was directly across the Potomac River from Washington, D.C. Now, he goes on to have a lucrative career as an orator and a playwright. He has a daughter, Mary Anna Randolph Custis, and she marries Confederate General Robert E. Lee. So when Custis died, George Washington Park Custis, his daughter, Mary, along with Robert E. Lee, inherit his estate that he inherited, not from George, but from George's wife, Martha, who had inherited it from her first husband, John Park Custis. So he dies in 1857.
We all know what happens next, the American Civil War. At this time, the U.S. government confiscates the Custis estate. And after the war ends, the Supreme Court rescinded the confiscation and returned the estate to George Washington Custis Lee, the son of George Washington Parke Custis's daughter, Mary, and father, Robert E. Lee. George Washington Custis Lee then sold the estate back to the U.S. government. This piece of property, the Arlington House, is today the Robert E. Lee Memorial. And the remainder of the Arlington Plantation is now Arlington National Cemetery. Can you believe the Pentagon has 284 bathrooms?
New subscriber geography trivia.